Welcome back. This is Microsoft Virtual Academy, Module 6, Advanced Contracts, Part 2. You're on Day 3. This is Advanced XAML Development for Windows 8. Darren, Hi.
Hello.
Darren, tell me, if I were looking for you online, where would I find you?
You wouldn't find me because I'm sitting right here. But other than that, you could find my company at crank211.com. crank211.com. Yeah. I lurk on Twitter occasionally at Darren May, all one word.
One R.
One in.
We're going to go through here some serious code. I recommend that you download our source code and check it out at xaml.codeplex.com, where you can grab and go through the exact code that we're about to go through. Pretty cool.
And play it back at 0.5 speed.
Play it back at the speed that fits you best. So I'm about to talk about Advanced Contracts Part 2. This is 6 of 8. We have 2 more after this. And let me start by talking about the search contract. So the search contract is one of those contracts you do have to sign up for. Mm-hmm. You have to go into your app manifest and you have to get permission for it. You know, you have to declare it. Just like the Play 2 contract, by the way,
absolutely,
which we're about to demo that after search. And so search is pretty handy if your app has data. Let's start with what search doesn't do. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people misunderstand a little thing. Yeah. And that is the search contract in Windows 8 does not search your data.
Yeah. It's smart. It's clever. It's not that clever.
No. A lot of people are like, hey, the best part about Windows 8 is it searches my data for me. It absolutely does not. All it is a UI. All it is a series of events. You respond to those events, you search your data, it doesn't know your CRM is in the cloud, it doesn't know anything about
it. It'd be like
data.
Saying Windows 8 prints my documents for me.
Oh, is that not true? I thought it did. Yeah. Your demo made it seem like it. So, do you see this slide? Let's talk about search.
Let's talk about search.
The search contract is a big deal because it's so powerful. This is the... It has its own UI. That's it on the right. It has a search text box that the user interacts with, right? Submits their query. It also gives suggestions underneath. It also allows your application to show up down in that bottom list of apps so that users can search your application even when it's not running.
That's pretty awesome.
It will run once they say they want to search it.
I imagine so.
But they don't have to first open your app and then say search, right? That's the important part.
Maybe that's the source of where people think that search is searching your data for you automatically, is they see the applications there, but they don't necessarily understand that your application is going to get started and handed the search criteria.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. When I type in Word in this image and I select... Store does the search on Word, right? Mm-hmm. Windows 8 just doesn't know how to do the searching.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong, Windows 8 has a fantastic indexer built in for files and apps and stuff like that. That has nothing to do with your application.
Absolutely. You have to implement that protocol.
Yeah. Okay. So we have the placeholder text. So these are the things you need to know. We have the placeholder text. That's the watermark that shows up in the text box where they're going to type in their query. Then we have suggestions requested. This event fires as the user is starting to type in their query. And it shows only what you provide, right? If you start typing in Word and Wordament shows up, it didn't know Wordament, but it's provided Wordament. The same thing with then query submitted. Query submitted is where the user hits enter and they go from there. The user also can tap on recommendations. You don't need to just supply suggested queries. You can also supply suggested results. That's when you say, I really do think that I know what you want. Do you mean Wordament, right? And they don't have to select it, but it's a full-fledged recommendation to the user. And then when they select that, it doesn't invoke search. It actually takes you to that record directly. That's a recommended result. And then we have a cool thing called Show on Keyboard Input. And you could set that to true or false. Show on keyboard input allows you to start to type no matter where you are, and it immediately launches the search UI, immediately starts to fill in that text box with whatever you're searching. If you're looking at a grid of records, then, in fact, let me pull up our application. I hope I have it running.
One of the really interesting things about all of these contracts is just how incredibly reliant they are on events.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Events being raised and subscribing to those events.
If you don't know how to use an event, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because this is all about it. So this is the application hub of our app, right? I still have the silhouette visible. In fact, let me hide it real quick just so it doesn't, so I don't pay attention
to it. Are those settings persisting? That's amazing.
Those settings are like, yeah, they're great.
Why don't you go green as well?
Let's just go green. All right.
Good job, you're colorblind.
All right, so if I started the in fact, let's do this. This will make it even more interesting. I'll go ahead and turn on all of the data. And so here is, this is the full list of data, right? So it has quite a few things I can search. Makes it a little bit more interesting. And so you can kind of see how it's all laid out that way. Nice.
So is that the semantic zoom?
That was the semantic zoom. That's exactly right. We talked about that in our previous session yesterday. And you can go back and look at that or look at our implementation here.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. I'm going to search for Control, C-O-N-T. And so you can see I typed C-O-N-T up there. It gives me controlling, control. Those are words that I've pulled out of the description and title of our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as two specific courses that match, right? Controlling programming and whatever the
so
other
one is. Kind of like your best bets or whatever?
They're kind of like best bets, yeah, for a SharePoint kind of term. Yeah, that's right. And so if I were to select, if I were to tap on controlling, it would basically take that string, put it up in the text box, and hit submit for me.
Those search results display great.
They're incredible. Yeah, I'm glad they do. All right, so if I were to do it again, so here is... let's see. Oh, wait. Stop. Control. If I were looking to have, if I were not wanting to select on the text or the select suggested query, but instead I wanted to click on the suggested result, those are the ones, those two ones. If I were selecting them, it wouldn't take me to the search results. Here, I'll tap on the first one. Instead, it takes me to that record, right? And so here I am ready to play that particular show. And it jumped me right to that record. So that's the difference between suggested query and suggested results. It's really nice.
And the thing about this is it's really important to understand that you have to design this behavior. You have to think about what it is that you want your application to do. Because, you know, it was intentional that we created those different types of results and intentional that we have those navigations and to have that display and the presentation of that information. So it's again, it's not just something that you casually throw in your application at the end and say, now we're done. You really need to think about, okay, how is search relevant to my application that I'm building? What data elements am I going to be searching on?
Even search results, I mean, I can't tell you how many developers don't understand why search results aren't automatic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Windows 8 has no idea what your app should look like.
And how to present your results.
That's exactly right. Here I'm showing with title over an image, but not all records even have an image. Not all records have a title.
Exactly.
And so it's up. You build the search result UI. You build the search.
I mean,
search
you could have just listed the words.
I could,
You didn't need to go and create all of those grid view elements, but we're trying to create an application that has a pleasant experience and is engaging to the users, and so you go that extra step to render the information up.
Yeah. Now, there is a file new object and search contract that I can go into. That's nothing special. That is just a predefined UI that you can then tweak from there. It doesn't do the searching for you, doesn't do the suggestions for you. It just has a predefined search result grid, and you kind of go from there. And so anyway, it's just a common misunderstanding, right, where developers don't understand why search, it doesn't even make sense, but it's just
Hopefully
something you have to build.
Our viewers have got that, and if they haven't, they can just rewind back and listen to that again.
I know, because certainly we kicked it. All right. No doubt. Let's see. I want to demo this to you. Let me see. There's a couple things that I think are worth pointing out. The first one is there's a type of activation that's geared specifically to search. So you know there is on activated in AppXAML, and then there's on search activated. You know the difference between the two?
Well, one would guess that the on search activated is fired when one searches.
Well, that's absolutely right. But so is unactivated.
Exactly.
I think it's confusing for some developers because, you know, you're looking at your project and you see these two and you don't know which to do. And it's just important to know that the XAML team created a few strongly typed overrides for the most common ways to activate your application. So search is one, share is one as well.
File activated.
File activated and protocol are not. They are, right, they would be example of the advanced, I guess, ways of activation that you would handle through on-activated. And it would be more like protocol, file, and everything else, right? But so you have a few of the most common ones, and then the rest are handled in OnActivated. The reality is you can handle everything in OnActivated if you are into that. But so there it goes. Pretty cool. This is what you would do in XAML CS. You would handle on search activated, so you don't have, that way you don't have to filter through the kind of activation, and then you create the frame. That's just in case that this is a launch and not just an activated, and you go to the search page, passing in the query text with it, and then from that point on, you allow the search page to do all the work. You don't know what's on from there. This allows you to handle if your application wasn't running and the user tapped on it in the search pane on the right and it was down at the bottom. Very nice. Mm-hmm. Let me pull up and show some of the events here. And then I want to show some advanced stuff as well, but I want to start with just this and do it kind of simply. These are the core events off of the search pane that you want to kind of lock into and handle. There's only three. There is let's start at the bottom. There are suggestion requested, right? That's where that we're filling in those texts for them. Mm-hmm. And then there's also query submitted. That's when they've typed in whatever and hit enter, or maybe they hit that little arrow on the right. And then the third and last one is result suggested, suggestion chosen. So what's special about this is when they've tapped on your suggestion. You know, you've given them an option. You're like, hey, do you mean this specific record? Yes, that record. You want to handle that differently, so there's a different event that's raised for it.
And that's how we can handle going perhaps directly to the record as opposed to doing something different?
Yeah, that's 100% right. And then these two properties above are really nice. So the first one is placeholder, right? You may have, you know, they're searching for, they're searching for widgets, and so you have widget name here, right? And so they mm-hmm. just something to give them guidance.
Just a hint on what sorts of elements they can search for in your application.
Yeah, it's just the watermark, right? Yeah. Inside it. And then this one at the top, show on keyboard input. When that's set to true, the user types anywhere, it diverts their typing into search. So if you have a text box in your application where the user is supposed to fill in a form, and you have show on keyboard input true, that text box is not useful. Because you cannot type in it, it'll automatically go over to the search. That means when it receives focus, when your text box receives focus, it's important for you to turn that to false. And then when you lose focus, you can turn it back to true.
Otherwise, our notes will be very, very useless.
Yeah. Yeah, we learned this by implementing notes. That's exactly right. Okay, so if I were inside suggestions requested here, and I think I'll just do kind of a mock implementation so you can see what it looks like. It's all inside the args, right? So args dot and args dot query text. So the query text is what the user is typing. So as the user types, they're typing controller. So they type mm-hmm. C-O-N-T. You get the query text of C-O-N-T. And now you get to go find, are there any things that, you know, any suggestions I can give the user based on C-O-N-T or whatever it is, right? And so I can take it from there, use my own logic, search my own pieces. I think there's kind of a caveat coming, right? Mm-hmm. Because how are you going to find this text? How are you going to find this information? Yeah. You're going to have to search against your data. Every time you touch your data, there's a cost involved.
Yeah. Is there an advantage to kind of pre-compiling some sort of search dictionary mm-hmm. to make this more efficient? And what about if your application is showing online data?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And your suggestions are useless if the user is way past, you know, it takes 2 seconds for you to return the data, that's mm-hmm. useless to the user.
Yeah.
So you have to think of a caching and all kinds of things. Right, so there's tricks into it there as well. And then under the request is a collection of search suggestions. And so this is where I say dot, and I have three things that I can append. So let's just say when it's suggested, I'm gonna offer right here, it's gonna say append suggest, there's two, append query suggestion and append query suggestions plural. So the first one represents a collection that you can pass back. So let's just say it's Darren and
always recommended
Jerry. One of those two is the suggested, right? Exactly.
And one of those is the recommended.
All right, so it's just asking for an array back, so I give it. So now the event was raised, the suggestion was given, And now those texts, they'll show up. So, in fact, let me attempt to run it now. And, oh, but I haven't given search as a, so I got an error here because I don't have it in the manifest, I haven't set it up in the application manifest.
That was deliberately done. Good job.
Yeah, I wanted to really drive that home that I have to go into app manifest, go into declarations, and drop it down and say, I am a search provider. And so right there, just select it, say add. And I don't have to add any of these pieces, right? They all are for...
Sometimes the caps can be a little bit intimidating because there's all this additional stuff. And it's like, I don't know what to put in there.
In this case, you don't have to put anything in there.
Exactly.
There are, you can, of course, but I'm not going to cover those right now. All right, so now I shouldn't get the error, right? I've already got show keyboard input to true, so that's kind of handy. So here's the search contract. It's a great UI.
Mm-hmm.
I just built it.
And
if I were going to start typing... You can see the recommendation now are Darren and Jerry. That's because that's the array I passed back.
Yeah.
Obviously, you wouldn't want it static.
Really, what every app needs to be statically producing is recommendations.
Just copy and paste this
exactly.
into your application.
Guaranteed store approval.
And right. And so let me add something else. So another thing I can add. So the first were these query suggestions. The next one would be this search separator. So there's a line. I'm gonna go, let me go back to the slide real quick. Let's see the slide. Yeah, this one. So see this little line says recommendations dash. So the dash, and then there's this word, and the word is optional. So here's the separator. I open parenthesis. It's asking for whatever that label is.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call that people for whatever reason, right? Now when I run it, it's kind of silly because I don't have anything under it, but it's a slow build this way. And so, in fact, it doesn't show until I put something under it.
Exactly.
But as I add that, I do want to make this point that I'm adding five things.
Yes, we covered this in our previous sessions when we were talking about it. But there is only a place for five total elements to show beneath that search box.
Yeah, yeah.
And your separator becomes one of them.
That's right. So you can have two suggestions, a separator, and two results. Or you could have three suggestions, a separator, one result, or five suggestions. But you can't have five of each or anything like that.
And it'd be really disappointing to have five separators.
Yeah. I don't, you can have more than one.
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. All right, so here's this separator. And I'll add one more here. And now we'll use to add a suggestion or a suggested result. And so I'll append suggested result. It asks for a lot of stuff here. So first is the text, right? So this is for Barry.
Uh-huh. Here's a picture of Barry because he's wearing no pants.
Wow, out of context, that's nice. To put that in context, though, Barry said, I wish I had brought pants today.
Indeed. We all heartily agreed.
All right, and then there are details. There's some details to put on. And then after that, is a tag, and the tag is sort of like your ID that you were using in your secondary tile. So when the user picks that result, you want to recognize which one they did. So the tag could be whatever you want it to be. I mean, it's a string, but an ID or some way to identify
it. Some form of technical key, if you want to use it that way.
Right. So we'll say it's 1, 2, 3, and then from the next thing it wants is a little image, right? Mm. So I've got a picture of Barry here. There you go. And then the last thing is the alternate text. This is, again, for accessibility on screen readers. So you'd put an alt text here for the result. So I don't need anything here. Right? Perfect. Now, that's all I need. URI just needs a using statement at the top. So now I've got two query suggestions. One separator, a single result at the bottom with an image. The image, you can not do an image, by the way. It's not a requirement. So if I go ahead and I'll go ahead and run this. And so when I search, it gives me both the query suggestions, the line shows up because there's something after it.
Yep.
And then it gives me the actual image as well, right? And so if I were to back out of this, and so let me take one of the suggestions out. It's you I'm taking out, Darren. But I'll add you as a query result instead, just so you can see.
How I prevented that by making you run the application?
That was good.
No!
So here is, let's see, this is you, Darren, right? You don't need to wear pants. All right, so now when I do a search, it's nice. See, I have a lot of power. I have a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, a lot of flexibility about how to present these results.
What would happen if I added one more item?
I think you wouldn't see it.
I think we got to try because my gut tells me what would happen, and I academically know what would happen.
Yeah, but seeing it in color makes it real.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, so I tried to add the sixth item. The sixth item pushed out the last suggestion, and it also pushed out the line above it. So now I've only showing four. It's going to restrict you to four, no matter five, no matter what. Yeah.
Yep.
Perfect. Anyway, so there I am implementing search. Now, one thing we were talking about was this search suggestions requested fires when the user is typing. And so we talked about the cost of going back and figuring out what suggestions you want. What we really need to do is throttle this. It's a series of events. Let's say the person is typing caterpillar, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a C-A-T, da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Every single letter raises this event. Mm-hmm. And he's, let's say, a fast typist. So, you know, you get these.
It doesn't make any sense because, you know, until somebody's paused, you don't know whether they've actually put in anything intelligent to search anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What I really want to do is say, only when the length of it is greater than, say, three or whatever number, only when they've been typing for a certain amount of time or paused for a certain amount of time, you know, and then only when it's different. Even if they've typed and then undone and then typed and then undone, and it's the same as it was just a second ago, I don't want to search
again. That's a lot of state that you've got to manage, though, inside these events. You've got to have some sort of timer that you're doing it. You've got to have some sort of queue to work out how many characters you've received.
I've got to keep track of the old one.
Yeah, that's brutal. A lot of headwork.
We need a framework.
Yeah.
I can feel it already. We need something that can handle this.
We need to react.
React to it properly.
Yeah.
And that's real. So here's how we do it, right? React is the right way to do it. Reactive extensions is a framework I can add to absolutely anything. I can add it to my .NET projects in Windows. I can add it to my WinRT projects. I can add it to my JavaScript projects. Yeah. It's a framework that Microsoft has developed. It's built into Windows Phone. That's exactly right. This is a framework that Microsoft has put together, and it's even open source, if you can imagine such a thing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is, actually. So let me pull up and show you the syntax for doing this. So let's see. We're setting up.
So you're bringing that up, it's interesting to talk about reactive extensions because they're somewhat similar to link in terms of, you know, link moves over collections.
Yeah.
The distinction that I think reactive extensions have is they move over future collections.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, that's really what's kind of spooky about them is that you define a relationship, you define how it's going to query these things when they arrive in the future and how you deal with them. And so that's a really interesting distinction. And I think, you know, you could spend hours just talking about reactive extensions and all the capabilities of it.
Yeah. If you want to apply a link to something, then you have to apply it to an enumerable. And events are not enumerable, right? It's just an event. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you want to respond to the action of an enumerable, it needs to be observable. Mm-hmm. And so both has to be an enumerable and observable, both to query against it and to react against it. And events are none of those. Mm-hmm. But if you think about an event, if you think about events instead as a stream of events,
yes,
right, like water pouring at you, and each drop is an event. Now all of a sudden, you could start to see this as a list, right, a list of events that are coming.
Yeah, moving through time as opposed to occupying memory space.
Yeah, stop making it hard.
But that's what it is.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, a stream is just things that are arriving to you over time.
So the first most important thing that reactive extensions does is it takes an event and it turns it into an observable enumerable that you can react to and query against. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing that it does. And you can make link statements that will not occur until later. You're right. It is kind of future-oriented. Okay, so let's take a look. Here on line 200, I began by referencing the observable type inside the reactive namespace. It has a static property on it. It says from event pattern. So this is about to create an observable, a link, a reactive observable, from an event pattern. So we say of what? And so this is the type right here. These are the event args because it is a generic method. And I pass in two things. The first thing is the object that raises the event. So in this case, it's the search pane event.currentView, right? That's our search pane. And then what event is it? It's the string of it in this case, suggestions requested. So this is as the user's typing, suggestions are requested.
And so there's also another syntax, isn't there, where you can create from an event and where you specify some event handlers for the subscribe to event and the unsubscribe to the event.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, it's an override of this method. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. But let's stick to this for just a second because we're already doing some brain damage here. All right, so if we could just stop with this one line, it's just one line on three lines, but if we could just stop with this one line, it's accomplished a lot. It's taken our event and turned it into an observable enumerable, right? Very powerful. Now, off of that, I want to do some things. So if I had a list and I was in C#, I could do things against the list. Here, I'll do the first thing, and this is special to reactive extensions, and it's .throttle. And so throttle means don't respond until a certain time has passed and the event has stopped. So this is different. There's a corollary to this
.sample.
That instead
sample
that picks it every period. So in this case it's milliseconds every half second.
And many people actually, that's what they expect from throttle. Is they expect you to be throttling back the rate of something coming across. They don't quite anticipate that it's, why am I not getting anything coming out of throttle? Well, it's because it hasn't stopped yet.
Right. Yeah. So if you have a stream of stock quotes or whatever, throttle may never fire, right, until the end of the day.
Yeah, unless your period that you're saying to wait exceeds the gap between an update.
Yeah, that's right. So if I'm looking for, back to stocks, if I'm looking for the current stock value, I might say just every second, then look and see what it is, regardless of how often it changes within that second. That's perfect for sample.
Yes.
But throttle here is perfect for search because I want the user to type until they're happy, and then I want 500 milliseconds to pass. Then I want to respond to what they just did. And so that's what this does. Throttle, and it says wait for half a second. And then, very important, it returns it back to the current thread. If you don't operate on the current thread, it cancels the event, and it won't work. I can tell you.
Which is disappointing and can be a headache to find.
And it took me forever to work out. Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that's exactly right. All right, so then we have a classic link where statement. So here I'm saying where the query text length is greater than 3. That we talked about this as one of the requirements as well. This is awesome. It won't even raise the event. I don't have to have any kind of query logic or anything. It's all right here, and it never even comes into my suggestion routine. And then one other really cool one is distinct until changed. And distinct until changed, which also takes a predicate, I can go in and
What's
say
a predicate?
What is distinct until it changes? It's a delegate.
The lambda function.
That basically allows me to create a where statement, basically. Mm-hmm. What is distinct? In this case, it's the trim of the query text.
Yeah.
And as long as that hasn't changed, again, the event will never run. It's just fantastic. Yeah. I mean, just the logic here. And you were trying to describe like all the things that you would need, and you were right. You know, you'd need this method, and you'd need a field, and you'd something static, and a timer,
You basically
got
to create a state machine in order to deal with this. And what Reactive Extensions is allowing you to do is declare this state machine on future activities. That only if everything gets through all of these gates do we want you to actually pump something out.
Yeah, yeah. And here it is in three lines that literally you can read, right? Mm-hmm. It actually makes sense. And then the last line is this subscription to the event itself. What do we do when that event finally is raised because everything is okay? We call to, in this case, our view model suggest, and it does the rest for us. And it goes and gets all the suggestions, it passes it back to the events for us, and the rest is magical from there. And we just follow the same logic as we did before. You pass in a string or an array of strings and so forth. But here, I can prevent burdening my system, I can give better performance to the user, and just bring sanity, to be honest.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so that's the search contract. The search contract is basically our interaction with that search pane. They type in their search query, or we provide hints to it. They finally hit search. We provide the search contract or the search results page, and they can do it either directly in our app, or they can do it, when our app isn't even running. Windows 8 will then invoke it. It'll have the launched and activated events will fire, and we can route them over to the search results. That's the way the search contract works. It's very powerful. It's a nice consistent way for the user to invoke common actions, right? That's what the charms are all about, a single point of invocation for common tasks. Search is the same way. There is one thing, we talked about this before, if you do have the need for advanced search, yeah, that's fine. You can put that in your application.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then, or even if you have the advanced search, hopefully you have a way of getting into search just by going through the search pane.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
99% of all the apps out there, maybe a higher percentage to that, implement the search
pane. And
it's
what your user expects.
And it's what the user expects because it's the uniform way of doing it in the entire ecosystem,
yeah,
including the way of doing it in the operating system too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a common interface, and I think it was a great design decision when they put this in.
All right. Now that is positive.
That's positive.
Okay. So that's the search contract. What other contracts do we have?
Well, the one we're going to talk about too now is Play 2.
All right. All right.
And Play 2 is fun. Yeah, we had a great deal of fun putting this together.
Yeah, we did.
And we got to explore some interesting things. Unlike search and the printing, it's actually pretty easy to join in to the Play 2 contract.
It feels like it's the most complicated and the easiest to implement.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly on the...
Most sophisticated.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in terms of cognitively thinking about what the heck's going on to do it, you know, it's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to the implementation on the client side, it's very simple and straightforward. Now, doing a receiver, now that's a little bit more. So anyway, what is the Play 2 contract? Well, it basically allows you to declare in your application that you wish to stream audio, video, or images, basically media, to some remote device. You're not declaring what device you want to go to. You're just saying, hey, I'm going to implement this protocol, and if there's anything available locally that implements this protocol, then that's where it's. I'm going to give the option to the user to choose those.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's pretty incredible.
It is. Audio, video, images, that's everything. That's
yeah.
All media.
It pretty much is. It's,
yeah.
It's pretty extraordinary. You know, there are... The Xbox 360, out of the box, supports the Play 2 contract. So if you have one of those...
You think the Xbox One will support it?
Oh, I'm pretty darn sure it does. In spades.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I keep asking to have a demo version, but they don't seem to want to give me one.
Yeah.
It's just rude.
I don't understand why you wouldn't get one.
I can't understand it.
Huh.
Yeah. It's
they
just
don't realize
rude.
Who you are.
Exactly.
Do you know who I am?
No.
Oh.
Okay, anyway...
Not just the Xbox.
Not just. Basically, there's a protocol called DNLA that a number of different devices, such as TVs, media extenders, and so on and so forth, can also implement. And if they are present on your local area network, then Windows 8 Play 2 can find that. It should be important to point out that what happens is these devices broadcast their availability on your local area network. Another example is Media Player in Windows 7 and Windows 8. That is also implemented DNLA protocol. But these things only advertise when they're running. So if you don't have your Xbox 360 switched on, you're not going to see it. It's not going to get installed. You know, it's not going to magically start it up for you. It's not like search.
Digital Living Network Alliance.
Absolutely.
DLNA.
Now, unfortunately, if we're talking about TVs, there's a couple of different variants on these protocols because there is always variants on these protocols. And some TVs that are DNLA will not appear because they don't implement the correct version of the protocol.
That's
not going to go into that. But be aware that if you see that, it's very annoying. The other nice
thing...
It's
probably the TV's fault.
It is probably the TV's fault. Yeah. Almost certainly.
Or the lazy developers that implemented it on the TV.
Maybe. The other really interesting thing, though, is on MSDN is some examples on how you can actually write a Windows 8 App Store that can implement the Play 2 receiver contract as well. And so one of the things that we wanted to do as part of this was to actually show it streaming out to a custom implementation of the Play 2 receiver as well.
The receiver, so you can build both sides.
Yep.
And the receiver is the only one that really... is the right name, right? Because it's Play 2. It Play to me.
Yes.
The other one should be called Play From, right? Because you're sending it out, right? But they're both Play 2. So you can create a provider and a receiver. What wonder what the opposite word is. Projector? Sender? Source?
Yeah.
Source.
Source.
There it is.
There we go. We'll call it that. So anyway, if we look at my slides, this is the Play 2 architecture. And what we have on the left-hand side is our application, which is the source of the media.
That's right.
And we have our detail view showing up, and right now we're showing a video in action being played back. We can declare...
And it's not the app that's the source, it's that one element that's
It's that
source.
One element, and in fact, it's the source for that element. ultimately the source.
That's awesome.
And so, we're downloading, we're streaming that video from a network location, Channel 9 or wherever it was that we got the video from. And we're setting the media element source to that URI.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're playing that back. We can then bring up our devices view, and we can look and see, are there any elements that we can send this to?
So that's the devices pane on the right there.
On the right-hand side.
Advanced XAML Play 2. That's what
yes,
we do.
Our cunningly named
Windows K.
Windows K is the shortcut for that, or you can just go through your regular charms and navigate to devices, and you'll see it there. Interestingly enough, that will only show up if you're actually playing video, because again, you have to have a source in order to play to something. So bear that in mind. Once we've determined that we're going to project our source to something else, we select a device and we register our interest with the Play to manager.
Yeah.
And we pass in the media element. And the Play to manager then pulls the source out of that media element and sets up a stream to our designated Play 2 receiver.
All of this is behind the scenes.
It's all
you
behind
don't
the
see
scenes.
Any of it.
Yeah.
You just say, here's the source, and they're like, no problem.
Go away, do your magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is, by passing the media element over, it allows us to actually remote control the Play 2, because the media element has the events around play, pause, skip,
so when I'm
ahead.
Playing the video here and I play 2, it's not playing here and there. It's just playing there.
It's just playing there,
at
but controlled from here.
Nice, so I become a remote control.
You become a remote control, because it would be really annoying if you turn around and say, hey, look, everybody look up there. Now watch me run over here to change it and start moving around. You know, really remote controlling that device.
That's
so that's
awesome.
Pretty slick.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you bring it up and you display it. So let's show how we basically register ourselves as being interested in the Play 2 manager.
Okay.
So, one of the key things that you need to remember is you need to register that you wish to use private networks.
Okay, so it's not a Play 2 capability I'm asking for.
It's access to a private network, because you need to be able to find this device on your local area network. And so in order to do that, you need this capability.
Okay, so most applications already have the internet available.
Exactly.
That's not enough.
That's not enough.
Private network means local subnet.
Local subnet. Be able to discover devices on the local subnet and connect to them.
Awesome.
And we didn't have any problem with that at all, did we?
No, once we figured it out.
Yeah, it was a piece of cake.
Yeah.
It's like, what the heck?
By the way, I think it's at least worth saying, we may say this later, but when you attach to a network and you get that dialogue that says, do you want to share yes, do you want to share no?
Yes.
You need to say yes.
You need to say yes, because otherwise... Even if you have private network capability, if you turn around and said, the network I am connecting to is insecure and I don't wish to share anything or discover devices, you're never going to see it.
It's over.
Yeah. And that also could have been very annoying if we hadn't thought about it.
Yeah. I'm so glad we figured that out.
Exactly.
As quickly
first time,
as we did.
Obviously. But other than that, suffer the pain so you get the gain. Anyway, register the view. So once we've turned around and said, okay, we want to be able to render up content remotely, we need to turn around and say, let's get the Play 2 manager for the current view. We then subscribe to the source requested.
Yep.
So again, what we're doing is there's an inversion of control in all of these contracts in reality.
That's right.
That's why we are responding to events, is we are turning around and saying, okay, Play 2 manager, we've said that we're interested. Now we're going to wait until you say somebody has interacted with the operating system to say we now want to play to a device.
This is similar to how we did print. It's similar to how we do settings. It's similar to how we do search. And now it's the same repeatable pattern.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, there's some variability in it, but fundamentally, this is the pattern. We are merely registering our interest. We're relying upon the user to then interact with the operating system to turn around and say, I wish to play to.
Yeah.
And we're just passively waiting until such times as they've engaged with us.
Yeah.
Once we've received the source request event, we now then need to return a media element.
Yeah.
And that media element already has to be bound to a source, already has to be playing
media.
Oh,
no. A media element is a XAML element.
It's a XAML control.
It's right there in the tags. It's right there. You've already got it in your toolbox. You're using it to show video. You can use it to show images. You can certainly use it to play sound or a mixture of all those.
Absolutely. Now, in our application, we're actually using the Microsoft Media or the Player framework, which has another controller that encapsulates the media elements. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see in our syntax,
it gives the play button and the volume.
Absolutely,
stuff.
It gives us some nice UI elements and so on. Also gives some additional capabilities over and above, which is why it's so large. When you see us interacting with it, we actually are requesting from that player that it give us the play to source.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've created a property on there that exposes the underlying element so that we can pass that across to play to, which is great. Makes life very easy. The other
and
thing,
very direct.
Very
it's not
direct.
Going through us anymore. It's
exactly.
going directly to wherever that source
yeah.
is.
Yeah. We passed it by reference and away it goes.
Hmm.
And that's all we have to do on the to actually make this stuff work. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, the code to actually be participatory in a Play-2 contract from a client perspective is incredibly straightforward. Building a Play-2 receiver, however, is a little bit more involved.
It also requires the private network capability.
Because funnily enough, if it can't advertise that it's available, nothing can connect to it.
There you go.
It's very useful. To actually implement Play-2 receiver, we're effectively going to configure the receiver itself
mm-hmm.
and set up any element bind or event bindings that are necessary. We also need a media element that is now going to play the source that we've provided.
Yeah.
And so we have to display that. And there's a whole bunch of events that need to be set up there to give the fine-grained control that we would expect on a video source. That, you know, so we can play it, so we can adjust the stream rates and so on and so forth.
Right.
All of this is really managed by the Play-2 infrastructure, but we need to wire these things up.
Yeah. Like up and down volume and all that.
Absolutely.
Sort of yeah.
You know, and skipping forward, skipping back, pause, play.
Yeah. And those events are both ways
mm-hmm.
so that you can tell the receiver that your remote control over here now is telling it to turn up the volume or whatever.
Yep.
But then the receiver could have that same capability
mm-hmm.
and you want to keep them in sync so those events
exactly.
flow both ways.
Exactly, so you can feed back. Yeah,
yeah.
It's very cool. So anyway, these are the events that need to be wired up on your Play-2 receiver. As you can see, they're
no
fairly
small
substantial.
List. Yeah.
But the MSDN example does show all of these wired up. One key thing, and it's actually somewhat common with some of the other contracts as well, is if you miss an event subscription and try to start your Play-2 receiver, you'll get a little bit of an idiosyncratic error that turns around and says, no. And that's always the first place I look is make sure that I've hooked up all of the events. I mean, I think there's some others like the location service and so on. If you haven't set something up, and you start receiving, or you say, I want to now receive location events,
yeah.
you actually get a bit of a nasty error that can send you down a bit of a rabbit hole if you don't know, okay, let's just go and check and make sure I've got all my event bindings
yeah.
set up.
Yeah.
So that's a little top tip. I'm not going to go through all of these media elements and so on and so forth. And
they're self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Like play requested, stop requested, volume
exactly.
change.
How hard can it possibly be?
Honestly, it's not all that hard.
It's not all that hard.
I mean, once you see it.
So, for Jeff, let's go and do a demo for Play-2. So, let's bring up the source code.
I think I want to point out that I've got my Surface sitting here on the desk, and we have built a Play-2 receiver, and it's running on the Surface, right?
That's correct.
Obviously, it supports ARM as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on the same network as ours, and so that they will be able to see each other. Now, it won't immediately see it. You have to add it as a device. And so,
I'm going to go through that.
Yeah, show us how you add it as a device. I'll move Scotty out of the way so he's...
So first things first, if you look at my development environment, here is where we've selected that we wish to be participatory on private networks.
Right.
So we've exposed that capacity.
Not checked by default.
And so go and find that. Make sure you check that. Next thing, in the detail, the code behind for the detail.xaml, we have a setup Play-2. This is invoked during the navigated to. Setup Play-2, which is in navigated to event.
Okay.
And here's where we do our simple piece of code that turns around and says, get the current Play-2 manager, bind to its source requested event, and we're passing in this method. When this gets called, we are getting a deferral because this is an asynchronous operation that unless we turn around and say to the Play-2 manager, wait until we're done before you move on,
right.
it's going to move on and we're not going to get an opportunity to actually hook up. We need to run on this on the dispatcher. So we've seen this pattern before, though we're running it on the normal thread. And we go ahead and based upon our current view state, as Jerry mentioned earlier on, we have visual states that if we're in portrait, landscape, we have different media players. If we're snapped and so on and so forth, we have a different media player. And so we're pulling from either the portrait or the landscape player, the play to source.
Got it.
And we set that into the source, and then we say deferral complete. And that's us registered, ready to go.
Awesome. It really is that easy.
It really is that easy.
It's crazy. I mean in comparison after we go to some through of those prints other ones, and all those other,
yeah.
I mean, this is insane. In a handful of lines, it really is done. And it's what it's accomplishing is stunning. Stunning.
Exactly. I will also just quickly jump up and show you the Play 2 Receiver project. It's pretty straightforward. I'll show you the manifest. So again, we have in the capabilities, private network is set.
Yeah.
Main page itself is pretty simple and straightforward. You know, we've got a page hung out. We've got a toggle button that we use to turn on and turn off the receiver. If we look at the actual XAML itself, we have a media element, and that's it. Here is our top level for our controls and so on.
Yeah, that's just for making it look pretty.
Exactly.
It's just the media element.
Just the media element sitting there. If we look at the code behind, so we have the start play to. Mm-hmm. So we basically create an instance of our play to receiver. Mm. We hook up all of these events.
Yep, there's a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. This friendly name is what our receiver advertises itself as on the network.
Nice.
To make it available for us to connect to. This determines what type of media we intend to support. We're supporting
cool.
all of them.
Yeah, it's cool.
Then this is us connecting up our video player events. So the video player is the media element that's on our page.
Yeah.
We then start asynchronously the receiver. And we basically wait. And what we do here, this is interesting, is we stop the display from locking because we don't want, although we're not interacting with our surface, we don't want it to go into a lock screen mode
yeah.
whilst we're trying to play a movie on there. And so this will stop it from going into screensaver mode or whatever whilst we're streaming our video.
And no doubt when you turn off the receiver, we can do
yep.
the reverse.
So when we stop, we have
that's pretty awesome,
display
by the way.
Request.
It's kind of an aside, not really specific to Play 2. You know, if
yeah.
you're creating a clock app or something, these are all really useful.
Absolutely. Now, of course, there's caveats in all of these things. Think about this from the perspective of battery life and so on. You don't want to just create any app and turn around and say, oh, I'm just going to block it for every single app.
Right.
You know, be cognizant of the fact that obviously keeping the display on is going to drain battery life. When we leave, we unsubscribe all of these events.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so we release out
the
memories.
Of the other.
And down here, this is where we really do the meat and potatoes of hooking up from the video player media ended to let the receiver know that we've ended and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just a pattern of connecting the dots between each of these events, between those two elements.
Yeah, when you see the individual methods, it's not that big of a
yeah.
deal. You just
it
have
really
to do them.
Is just plumbing, that you're just bringing these things together. So anyway, that's included, and you can find it on MSDN as well. So without further ado.
So we have that. Our receiver is running right here.
Yep.
Already broadcast on the network. Show us the device UI.
Let's bring that up.
There you go.
So here's our device UI, and here we have our Play 2 device. So it's been discovered on the network and is available. We could create a friendly name for ourselves if we wanted to, but we won't.
And it wasn't there to start with. You clicked add a device.
Yep.
It went out to discover the broadcast. It mm-hmm. saw it, gave it to you, you selected it.
And then it installs. So you have to have the Play 2 receiver running in order for it to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure you start that, hit that toggle button to say start. Once we have that, then it's available for us in our application. So now let's go and run our app.
Our app will be the provider or the source.
Exactly.
This is the target. And they're on the same network. The devices are already set up. As soon as you start sharing,
mm-hmm.
then it's
it should magically
all
happen.
The magic starts
So now
happen.
What we're going to do is we're going to start our video locally because we have to have media playing. And so it's playing locally. And now I can use Command-K to bring up my devices, and I can see our advanced XAML play to.
Now, it's only there because we have subscribed to that event and provided all the stuff that it needs.
Exactly, and because we're playing a video. So now if I select this...
So the first thing we'll see is it stops playing.
So now it stopped playing, and what we've got is a gray screen, and that indicates that it's streaming across.
Hmm. That's funny. Let's do it again. Yeah, back out, and let's do it one more time, because so here's the...
So basically what we see now
is... Let's see if I can pull this so everybody can see it there.
Yep.
So it's ready to play.
Turn
it
on.
So you just started the receiver. All right, let's try it. So we'll go into the individual record, save, advanced. Stops playing.
And now it appears over on the surface, so we can see it playing down here. And we can also see through the magic of technology. I'm reaching into the demo.
Oh, you're breaking the fourth wall! Oh!
But this is basically playing now on our Surface device, and we've also projected it up virtually up here so that you can see it a little bit more clearer. If we switch back to my screen, we can see that my video is showing in gray, and we're streaming across, but I can now remote control from this media element and so on. And that's as simple as it is to implement this Play 2 interface.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is amazing. It really is. Now, a few caveats.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the fact that you have to have sharing on both devices turned on for that network.
Yep.
You know, you may or may not want that, depending on where you are. The other thing that is worth pointing out is... The device, even though you're sharing, you still could be on a network that blocks this sort of action.
These protocols, yes.
Yeah, and so that's just a reality. There's a handful of ports that it uses.
Mm-hmm.
Most networks don't care about those ports, so it goes on through it. At your home, which is really where this is kind of played out,
yep.
You're not going to block these ports. Your Xbox right there. You're just going to play right to it. Or what? I mean, it's going to be your TV, Xbox, your receiver, mm-hmm. where you're going to send your music or something like that.
Yeah.
And your phone is probably going to be on the same Wi-Fi network. It's going to have the same capabilities. So there certainly are things to be aware of that may cause it not to work. But these are the types of capabilities you see in a lot of things. The reality is, it's stunning. So much is done behind the scenes for you
mm-hmm.
in a line or two, and it's done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So to recap.
All right, well, we start talking about the search contract, and I think that's a very valuable one. And again, it goes back to Windows 8 does not know how to search your application. Only you know how to search your application. Only you know where your data is. This is just a unified or a consistent UI for searching every application, including yours. And so you need to plumb it all in. But we went through how you add suggestions, how you add suggested results, and then how you respond to the event, and how you can use reactive extensions to sort of throttle down the events so the experience is not only better, but you also don't punish your servers and your back-end services
mm-hmm.
so that they may then blow up from the fast
And especially
of the user.
If those services may be pay-to-play.
Pay-to-play, yeah, that's right.
You know, you don't want to be hitting those... for a dollar or a cent a time or whatever, and build up a lot of cost. And then we went on to the Play 2 contract, which, as I say, we had a lot of fun putting together. It was a lot of fun getting these two moving parts working and collaborating and so on. So it was a lot of fun. And it's very, very simple to do. If you're playing media in your application, there's really no reason not to do this.
Yeah. You know,
it's a few lines of code, gives a lot of flexibility to your user base, and you know they can have a lot of fun with it.
And let's think about practicality. You may not have video, but you may have images,
mm-hmm.
right? And why not make these Play 2 ready? You may have music that you're playing. Why not make that Play 2 ready?
Yeah.
Then when the devices appear on your network, suddenly you can start using it that much more.
Yeah, your Xbox One will thank you.
Your Xbox One? All right, that's the wrap of this module. We're going to take a 10-minute break and come back. What number of modules is this?
This was number 6, so we have 7 and 8 to go.
Very good. We'll see everybody in 10 minutes.